Sure.
Can you tell me a little bit about who Brian Gyson was and who Ian Somerville was?
Well, Ian Somerville was, as far as I understand it, and it's not talked about so much, but he was definitely one of William's lovers for a period of years. And he met them, I believe, in Paris. And he was a young, good-looking student of electronics who worked with computers. I think he actually was one of the first computer programmers. And also was interested in tape recorders. And he was the technical connection that made these experiments feasible. Without him, they may never have happened. And he actually thought of many of the variations, like the throat mics he thought of, and the backwards tape, and lots of the other effects were added by him or suggested by him to William. But it was Brian Gyson who actually did the first tape recorder cut-ups. He was living in 9 Rue Gilles-le-Coeur, which was the Beat Hotel. And it was him who, whilst cutting through some paper with a scalpel to make pieces of paper the size he wanted to do drawings on, also cut through the newspapers underneath. And when he rearranged those bits of newspaper, idly noticed the whole cut-up effect, and then went rushing downstairs to William and said, look, listen to this. And that's how the whole thing began. And that was what William immediately recognized as the solution to his whole problem with writing. And he's always made a point of trying to remind people that Brian Gyson was the instigator of nearly all the techniques that he is famous for. He didn't actually invent any of them. Brian did. And although he keeps putting it in the front of his books, and he always tries to mention it in interviews, and he insisted that in the sleeve notes of the album I made it very clear that Brian thought of everything, people still tend to think William's the one, and who's this Brian Gyson? And in fact, Brian Gyson is the guy who connected William to magic and alchemy and certain of the drug ideas and Moroccan music, everything.
Word, falling. Photo, falling. Breakthrough in Grey Room.
Page 157. Syllables tell me a trouble. Perfume, shadow, water, sorrow could not lessen the night. Now the night zones of dim steel turn tomorrow on. Page 274. A strange day ago. 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and to kill the confronted morning moving slowly along, down water winding walk like a wandering flower the whole world among, he was there walking slowly.
Well, I knew what William Burroughs was doing, and it was reading his talking about what he was doing in the Paris Review that seemed to make it possible to make an ambitious work of something that I was thought was fooling around. And one always thinks one's this kind of person doing this kind of thing, and one does this other kind of thing as fooling around. The problem of my life is whenever I fooled around at something, it becomes almost instantaneously part of my profession.
But so you didn't take it terribly seriously. It was something to... It was dilettantish initially.
Yes, very, very much so.
And then it suddenly became more interesting and more interesting.
Well, yes, I realized that not only could you cross things out and leave yourself with poems that were better than those you would write if you were writing poems from scratch because you were standing on somebody else's shoulders, but also you could feed into the spaces that you've left by cancelling things out the kind of imagery you were interested in which supported those poems. In other words, you were producing an illustrated book in an instant.
What do you... I mean, how do you actually regard Burroughs come Brian Gyson's notion of cut-up? Do you think it's a... Do you think it's a valid exploration of language?
There's only one criterion for judging, and that's results. Are the results any good? I've read bits of Burroughs that are very illuminating. Something happens that's quite magical. I mean, I suppose some of Yeats's wife's automatic writing was enough to start him off with what ended up in being his final philosophy. That's because he used it. And I suppose Burroughs doesn't leave things as naked as he always says he does, like everybody else. I mean, that you just don't do it because you're a craftsman. And even in the tumbling of the pieces of paper from Arp's hand as they go down onto the ground, I mean, there's a kind of flick of the wrist that is an artist's flick of the wrist rather than any nitwit letting pieces of paper fall. And that plays a part. Knowing the kind of material to cut up must be very important.
Page 353. The first stones cast against names. Words, words, make me a rose. He saw her as he turned, how heavy his hand would feel, which at last he off forever, between them laden, so he felt, a naked reached old at the dirty passage an hour off, all this grew deeper. Everything had an air of veilest reason, sheets. I have my clothes of infection on, my envelope of death. Page 199. Such a new and expanded range to art. Hid in a field, about 3 PM, art under art. The Austrian of yesterday made it without losing. Page 307. Play, lady, play. As to your enclosure, a heart of stone. Alarming. Page 238. He showed me a certain photograph, posed, I dare say, of the waterworks at Bucharest.
As far as the connection between Humament and Burroughs is concerned, have you ever actually met Burroughs?
I've only met Burroughs extensively. I mean, rather than see him as a person in a suit and a hat and on the other side of a room at a party, I met him once very formally. I made an appointment to see him because I wanted to see what he thought of this work, part of which or derived from things that he'd said. So I went to see him in his rather Spartan Duke Street St. James apartment. I mean, you can live Spartanly where the rich live, which is pretty amazing. You go in this very opulent set of chambers, and there's his, was just a table and a chair, and there didn't seem to be a drink or refreshment in sight. And we had, that was one of the longest conversations, longest unbroken conversations I've ever had with anybody, and certainly one of the most hard-working, where you really had to be rigorous all the time, because there was a man who was being very tough and questioning every kind of sloppy half-definition that you were sliding into. And he made very good criticisms of the book as it had gone. I mean, this was quite early, about 1968. I hadn't done very much of it. And he made very valid criticisms, I thought, that it was, stooped too easily into the romantic mode of the original instead of finding something a little harder-grained. And so his criticism is buried somewhere in the book as it stands now, and I suppose gets buried more and more into it as I go on. I mean, I certainly responded to that criticism, and it was very valuable.
This is the first performance of Ornamentique by Tom Phillips, which is going to be played by John Tilbury, Tom Phillips, and Murray Welsh. Ornamentique by Tom Phillips, first performance.
Do readings, and I'm thinking back to the record with the early section of Nova Express on it. Do you actually read directly from your own work, or do you improvise? Because it strikes me that that's a form of improvisation.
I read directly from my own works. It may be from memory,
But those are quite as carefully rehearsed as a stage performance. Every word is rehearsed. If I'll read a sentence, if it doesn't sound right, it's got to be changed, it's got to go out.
So you, in fact, do you have a dichotomous role? You're an entertainer and a writer at the same time. Do you like being an entertainer?
Well, I enjoy it. I wouldn't do it unless I had to. But I never gave readings until I came back to America. See, my readings date from about 1973. Right. Never did readings before that. So I started to do it. I found that I could do it well, and that I enjoyed doing it. I enjoyed the audience response. And then it turned into, developed into something that is about half my income at the present time. Yeah, and as I say, it's been very beneficial. Lots of things that you have to do when you enjoy them, and it's a good thing that you did have to do them, like cooking, for example. Not surprised. When I came back to this country and I started cooking, which I had never done before, and I wouldn't have done if I'd had somebody to do it for me, but it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Same applies here. But they are very definitely performances, and very carefully rehearsed performances.
Jim recruits a band of flamboyant and picturesque outlaws called the Wild Fruits. There's the crying gun who breaks into tears at sight of his opponent. What's the matter? Somebody take your lollipop? Oh, senor, I'm sorry for you. And the priest who goes into a gunfight giving his adversary the last rites. And the blind gun who zeroes in with bat squeaks. Kim trains his men to identify themselves with death. He takes some rookie guns out to a dead horse rotting in the sun, eviscerated by vultures. Kim points to the horse steaming there in the noonday heat. All right, roll in it. What? Roll in it. Get the stink of death into your chaps and your boots and your guns and your hair. Well, most of us puked at first. But we got used to it, and vultures followed us around, hopefully. We always ride into town with the wind behind us. The townspeople gag and rich. My God, what's that stink? It's the stink of death, citizens. And I think, personally, the whole planet stinks of death. And what are we going to do about it? Well, all this may have happened many times before in this old universe. Here we are, trillions of years ago in Galaxy X. And a rally has been organized to protest the use of black holes as an energy source. A bit late, as it turned out. Closing time, gentlemen. Brian Gyson has a bedtime story. It seems that trillions of years ago, a giant licked grease from his fingers. One of these gobs of grease is our universe on its way to the floor.
The 20th century, to many people, is a sort of vision of hell. There's been mass extermination of people on a level absolutely unprecedented in any previous century. We have developed a kind of industrial society that now seems to be seriously out of hand. Cities are obviously getting too big for themselves. They're creating internal pressures and tensions. Do you think that that is central to what you have been writing about all the way through?
Well, it's my my feeling that the chaos we see reflects a biologic crisis of which the very few people are aware, but it's there. I mean, end of the line for this species. Remember that all species can go so far, and then they don't go beyond that. There comes a point and mutate or die, change or die. And I think that the human species is getting very close to this point. And the this knowledge which they have, which everybody has, of this biologic crisis is reflected in the chaos that we see.
The president, with his toadies and familiars, is now 500 feet down in solid rock, with enough fine foods, wines, liquors, cash, coke, and heroin to last 100 years, and the longevity drugs to enjoy. Held off the market in the interest of national security. The president appears on national TV with his well-cut suit hanging loose on his skinny frame to pipe out in adolescent treble, alternately pompous and cracking. We categorically deny that there are any crack, so-called fountain of youth, drugs, procedures or treatments that are being held back from the American people, crack. He flashes a boyish smile and runs a comb through his unruly, abundant hair. And I categorically dismiss as without foundation rumors that I myself, the First Lady, my fag son, my colleagues in the cabinet are sustaining ourselves on state-of-the-art vampiric technology, drawing off from the American pimples, crack, giggle, so-called energy units. His hair stands up and crackles, and he gives the American people a finger. I got mine, fuck you, every crumb for himself. It is Colonel Bradfield's job to investigate the practical potentials of ESP, sorcery, witchcraft, the lot. He doesn't give a shit for natural laws or what is and isn't possible. All he cares about are results. Bring me the ones that work. What'd you bring this old beast in here for? A withered old man dressed only in a loincloth, stiff with yellow piss stains, stinking like a snake cave in spring, sits down in a leather armchair. Fumigating the chair will be inadequate, the colonel decides. He's a natural cheat. He can throw an operative curse. I don't doubt it. He can kill by proximity. He's got a good track record, Chief. Sure, sure. And 80 years in the making. So how did he get that way? To be a magician, you gotta be inhuman in some way. Easiest is to eat your own shit and eat it steady. Eat it in and shit it out and eat it in again. It gets eviler and dirtier, a stink nobody can smell and live. But who am I to be critical? Trouble is, it just isn't practical. But Chief, no trace, no way it could be traced to us. Well, hell there isn't. You think the Ivans aren't into this shit up to the ass? You can dig and make up the evidence, we all do it. No way to trace it, big deal. 80 shit-eating years to turn out one old human centipede can throw a curse if you hold him steady on target. I can train an agent in hours with untraceable poisons and toxins, electronic devices to produce arrhythmical heartbeats. He died in his sleep, dreaming about a beautiful, deadly woman, and all he wanted to do was die in her arms. See what I mean? We don't need it. But Chief, we can't just throw away a thing like this. Indeed, where can we throw it? It's radioactive. Get it out of here for starters and take the chair out with it. surgical program, every man a god. And how can this be accomplished? Well, to put it country simple, by doing your job and doing it well. Because there are many gods. A god of whores and thieves and pushers. A god of fevers and plagues who rides on a whispering south wind. A god of the long chance. The horse that comes from last to win in the stretch. The punch-drunk fighter who comes off the floor to win by a knockout. A god of anti-heroes and outrage. The ship's captain who put on women's clothes and rushed into the first lifeboat. The pilot who bailed out of a burning plane, leaving his passengers to crash. A god of future space travelers who are ready to leave the whole human context behind and take a step into the unknown. Every man a god, that is, if he can qualify. You can't be a god of anything unless you can do it. Now that wasn't a nice thing to say, I.S. And when you say things that aren't nice, you hear things back that aren't nice. Is this machine recording? Is this machine recording? Is this machine recording?
El Scotland's put on handkerchief masks, arm themselves. Hablando ahora del oeste a razón de 6 millas por hora. Repetimos, la temperatura actual 74 grados.
Most of his criticism for Red China rather than North Vietnam. Johnson, addressing a meeting of editorial cartoonists at the White House, held 3 maids at gunpoint and proceeded to ransack the apartment. Their take, once peace is established. He offered to support an Asian deal for unconditional peace talks and emphasized the weather.
Trap chocolate ice cream.
After known the high and the China for blocking Vietnam peace negotiations. Rebel snipers have killed another Marine in the Dominican Republic. The Marine's death brought to 18.
Destroys the Connecticut home of New York executive claiming 3 lives. The UN Security Council resumes debate.
As the sniping continued, representatives of the Organization of American States were at work trying to find...
Word, falling. Photo, falling. Breakthrough in gray room. He has gone away through invisible mornings, leaving a million tape recordings of his voice behind, fading into the cold spring air, pose a colorless question.
Question.
Junk turns you on vegetable. It's green, see? A green fix should last a long time. An unworthy vessel, obviously. So, I have decided that junk is not green. Blue.
Around in a pounder. Stuck it out around. 4:20.
Hold
Oh.